Well, what's up? My name is Mike Hickerson. I'm honored to be the lead pastor of Mission Church. We got a little bit of business we got to take care of first. So it's we're going to talk about honor today, which is going to be fun. So in light of that and in the spirit of that, it is Jim Sheldon's 65th birthday today. So maybe that's not his birthday, but it is his birthday today, but it's not 65. Can we just yell on the count of three, happy birthday to Jim? One, two, three.
Happy birthday!
All right. Let's not get too passionate about it, all right? I don't like that guy that much. No, I love our church. We exist as a church to help each other find and follow Jesus. That's what we're going after together. Man, we believe that God is who he says he is, and he sent Jesus into the mess of humanity and so that we could be rescued and restored back to much-loved sons and daughters of God, and that means there is hope for every single one of us. So I totally believe and understand that there are people walking in and in this room and in the lobby that are not on the same page as that, and that's cool. This is a safe place to be on the journey, to go like, okay, if God is who he says he is and will do everything he's promised to do, that has some massive ramifications for my life, and I need to probably maybe even think through what that would mean in my heart and my mind and my soul and my relationships and my future and, you know, what I do for work and how I work and where I cut corner. I mean, it has massive ramifications if we're going to be followers of Jesus. So I know that people on the journey don't take that lightly, and we also honor and respect the journey that you're on to maybe be somebody that finds and follows Jesus down the road, and hopefully we're not creating too many more obstacles for you to do that, but helping people along the way. And you're walking in a room full of imperfect people that have been rescued and loved by a really good God. And we're all broken and messy. So that means that we're broken and messy people that are in relationship with each other and all kinds of relationships with each other, whether it be working or dating or marriage or family or, you know, in schools or on team, you name it, we're in relationships with each other, but we're all imperfect. So that makes it for some fun dynamics at play. And yeah, I know that you're perfect, but everyone else doesn't do relationships right. So the worst drivers in the world follow you around, but your driving is exceptional. You know, no one else is wrong. It's just you. We'll talk about that later. But we're in this series called Relatable, where we try to say, okay, we all are in these relationships. How do we navigate these relationships together? So the first week, and I can say this because I didn't teach the first 2 weeks, these are incredible messages. I am so sorry if you're just here for week three. If you want to put your AirPods in and listen to week one while we're doing it, that's great because it's an incredible message. Or week two, it's great too. But week one, we're talking about how would you date? Like, how do you date great? Like, and we kind of said, am I becoming the person that the person I'm looking for is looking for? There's this like myth out there that if we just, you know what, I'm a mess, but if I could just find that right person out there somewhere, and then if I find the right person, even though I'm a mess, everything will be all right. And then you realize that you meet an imperfect person, and well, they're messed up. I'm way more messed up than they're messed up, and then we bring our imperfectness together, and we don't know how to date great. And those of us that are married, it's like we probably needed to remember how to date great and still date. And those of us that are married, we also probably want to make sure that we can help our friends and our kids and our extended family and then our neighbors and our people that we work with of like, what would it look like to date great? The second week, we walk through the expectations, and Jody taught, and I've given her so much research of what in the life of our marriage of what to do when you expect this and you receive this, you know? So I feel like I helped teach that message. But no, she said, what do you do when you're in relationship and it's marriage relationships or working relationships or teammate relationships or boss and coworker relationships or school relationships or friendships? What do you do when like there's the gap between what you expect and what you receive? Like that, the gap between like the differences between me and you. Like I thought if everyone would be just normal like me, then we'd be fine. Or the gap between like my way and your way. I didn't even know there was a your way when we got married. I thought it was only my way, and that would have been great. The gap between expectations and behavior. The gap between my needs and what you give. What we found and what we worked through together. It's an incredible message. I'm serious. You need to go listen to it. But it's that idea that when we have that gap, there's an opportunity for us to grow. There's an opportunity for us to accept the other person. There's an opportunity for us to serve. And there's an opportunity for us to believe the best or assume the worst when we have that gap. And man, it has been incredible. Today, we're going to walk through what it looks like to honor, to put a high price tag on each other as we're in a relationship together. I mean, this is such a big deal to God that he put it in his top 10 list. He got like 10, you know, he has more commandments than that, but we just like to focus on the 10 because we can't even keep those. But he put it in his top 10 that, you know, children, you should honor and obey your parents. And that like this, and it will go well with you and you'll live a long life. It's the first one with the promise. Honor is such a big deal to God in relationship. He wanted to include it in his top 10. And fourth, we're talking about next week, we're going to talk about staying in love. You know, those relationships that like last over the 50 years and over the 60 years, and they're like unicorn relationships, like you can't find it in the wild anywhere. We actually get to interview somebody next week, Mike and Debbie Bro. We're going to interview them and just say, okay, for those of us that are, you know, in high school, for those of us that are in college, for those of us that are single or dating or wish we were dating or divorced and trying to figure it all out, or like, what does it look like for a couple to actually stay in love? And we're going to interview them, and hopefully all of us can get some clues and some help along the way of what it means to have a life-giving, God-honoring relationship over the long haul. Some of us may be asking, like, why in the world will we even talk about this? I would just say, like, more than half of the people that attend Mission aren't married. So we're trying to figure out, like, okay, how can we warn single people about some, or not married people about some of the stuff that all of our marriages are struggling with? I mean, not ours, but your marriages are struggling with. We want to let them know. No, and we want people that aren't married to go, like, if there's a vision of marriage out there that, like, if you can set yourself up now, if single or dating or wanting to date or whatever it is, like, you can be excited about a future relationship. That's okay. They don't all have to be, like, imploding and ruin your life. It doesn't have to be the end of, like, a thing. It could be the best part of a thing. We also wanted to say, like, singleness is not a less than life. It is more than a God-honoring life to live a single life sold out to what he wants to do in and through your life. You don't need someone to be complete. You complete me. You know, so Jody said last week, and I thought I did complete her, but apparently I don't complete her. But singleness is like, singleness is not a less than life. One of the things we said is that, man, character is way better than chemistry. Because as you're navigating through relationships, because chemistry can change, you're like, wow, we have so much chemistry. I just love you so much. The mariposas, the butterflies are all over the place. I've never met anyone that's so amazing like you. Then over time, the chemistry fails. And then they're like, well, we had chemistry, but now I have chemistry with you. You know, and then, so then it's like, what's more important, the character or the chemistry that we're living relationships with? Because we can spend less than a year planning a wedding, but we've spent multiple years creating behaviors along the way that can train wreck a marriage. I mean, other people do, not us, but those other people do. In fact, I heard one guy say, like, that this girl, he saw this high school girl that was flipping through, like, what Taylor thought through, like, on 1 Corinthians 13, to put the person that you're trying to be in relationship with in the blank is kind, blank, you know, is patient, blank is, like, in 1 Corinthians 13, when it's talking about love, and she was like, my boyfriend is none of these things. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, I mean, you love him, but what do you love about him? Because it's got to be more about character than it is chemistry. And so we're going to walk through today how to put high price tags on each other, to honor each other. And that's what honor is, to attach a high price tag to someone, to have high respect and great esteem, to regard with great respect, to put you up, up in a way that honors you, to esteem you in friendships and relationships and dating relationships and coworker relationships and family relationships and marriages. How do we get about honoring each other the way that God would have us do it? And I think it starts with understanding who we are in God's sight. I love this quote from Daniel Strickland. It says, true humility is agreeing with God about who you are. Because some of us, let's be honest, we walk in and we have been beat down. We've got those voices in our minds, or we've got what everyone has told us. We've got the labels that everyone else has put on us. And so when we walk in and hear that God says this about us, we don't agree with that. So we're not humble because we don't agree with what God says about us. And I would just want to just graciously, as best I could, to say, yeah, you are a much loved son or daughter of God. And so you have every right. You are accepted, secure, and significant. And you need to not have pride, because that's the opposite of humility. Agreeing with God, what he says about me. Pride would be not agreeing with God about what he says about me. So even if you have a low view of yourself, you can be prideful. You're like, now, great, you called me prideful. I already have a low view of myself. I would say, no, why don't you humble yourself and agree with God about who he says you are. And some of us, we're like, well, that's great that I'm accepted and secure and significant. I have a very high view of myself, and I could have probably given some God some other adjectives that he could use to describe me, because I am just, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, doggone it, people like me, and I am God's gifts to relationships and to humanity. I mean, the world is so much better because I am in it. God, aren't you glad I'm here? Aren't you glad you made me, God? And so we need to maybe come down a few steps off of pride and agree with, in humility, with we are exactly who God says we are, nothing more, nothing less. And when we're talking about trying to attach a high price tag to each other, it gets complicated, because every single one of us are in a different place on this spectrum, maybe on a number of issues. So sometimes when people are trying to attach a high price tag to you, but you feel so down here, you reject the honor that they want to give you because you don't agree with who God says you are anyway. And sometimes when somebody's trying to attach a high price tag on you, it's not high enough because you have such a high view of yourself, they could never get to the top of your head to put the price tag on because you've already put it on there yourself. So we got to learn how to do this together. Because if we lack humility, agreeing with what God says we are, we can never look and see to honor anyone else. Impossible. And if we only create and need a culture that honors us, if we lack humility. I'm going to walk through a few areas that honor plays out. And I'm going to spend, just fair warning, I'm going to spend 90% of the time talking about how men can honor women. I'm not mad at it, but I am a man and I'm in a house full of women. So I've got a wife and three daughters. That's a lot of estrogen in my house. We tried to have a male dog, but my middle daughter almost died because she's allergic to him. So fellas, anytime I ask to hang out, it's because I need some guy time. But I have a lot of women in my house and I want to make sure that we become a church that honors, that where men honor women. 1 Corinthians 13:11 says it this way. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. And when I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. Probably over a decade ago, I heard a talk from Andy Stanley. He's a pastor that I really respect. And it's really influenced and shaped this. And it's this idea of this biblical view of women and how us as guys that are following Jesus, imperfect as we may be, need to learn how to live and put honor on every single woman around us. Not just the women we date, but including the women that we date. See, in our culture, women are viewed, presented, sung, and talked about like they are a commodity. Something cheap that we can attain and then we can use and spend and try to trade up to get another one. Our culture has messages about women that say this. It says, take me, use me, do anything you want me with me, and then trade me in for a better model. And we've got people that are in men's bodies that are acting like boys that do not know how to honor a woman or treat a woman. And I just love us too much as a church to skip over this, because I'm going to say some stuff today that's going to fly in the face of culture. But these ideas were first introduced in the first century by Jesus. And it was much weirder of a culture that they were speaking into. Because when these were introduced, the women weren't just treated like a commodity. Women were a commodity. They had no rights. They weren't even viewed as like someone who could vote. They could not entertain a court of law. They were not even counted in the stuff. Prostitution was legal and encouraged. Roman and Greek world, you owned slaves, including women, and you could do whatever you wanted to do with your property. The first century world, no one wanted little girls. They were thrown away and discarded and set aside, and women were a commodity with no status and no rights. And into this world, it's probably even so hard for us to imagine what this ragtag group of Jesus followers spoke into this world. You had these people that were following Jesus around, and there's this like, we believe that he is who he says he is, and that God sent him, and he's rescuing us, and he's teaching this way, and it's a brand new way to live, and it flies in the face of culture. So one time, he's got all these people that are following him around, and he starts teaching. He's got this guy named John, who creatively wrote the book of John, and he says, John, I'm going to just teach something that's new. I need you to write this down. Grab a pen. You don't know you're writing the Bible yet, but just grab a pen, because this is going to get in there. And it says this, a new command I give to you. This is Jesus' words. Love one another. Not like romantic love, but like love one another. And somebody raises their hand in the back. Even the women? Because we don't talk to the women. Like they don't even count. We don't let them speak anywhere. We're supposed to love the women. Yeah, Jesus like, yes, yes, the women. What are you talking about? This is a new way, a new rule. This is the new way we're going to get along. Love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. Hand in the back. Even the girls? Because they don't have rights. Yeah, shut up. Yes, of course the girls. Like in this new way, in this new community, in this way that we're living, there's slave people that are gonna be here and free people that are gonna be here. There's people of Jewish descent that are gonna be here and people of non-Jewish descent. It doesn't matter. There's men that are gonna be here and women that are gonna be here. They all have equal rights, equal honor, equal love is expected between all of us. And this is a new way, a new command that I give to you, that you would love one another. And he says, by this, everyone will know you are my disciples if you love one another. Jesus is going, it's almost as if God knew, like the way that we were going to live as Jesus followers is going to be so countercultural to the world that people would look and go like, I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if I believe everything that they believe, but I cannot deny that there is something compelling about the way that they relate to one another. And it feels right. And it feels like a better culture than what I'm living in and coming from. Maybe there's something to the way that they live. And I would say men, just specifically to men, every woman that you lock eyeballs with is an opportunity for you to put this into action, to put a high price tag on her, not because you want to date her, not because it's romantic love, but because God said this is the way it looks like when men are following Jesus. They honor and respect and validate every single person around them. It gets even harder. Ephesians 5:25, Paul, like, it's okay, Jesus has been crucified, the church is starting. Paul's like writing letters to all these people, and he says, husbands, love your wives. Paul, you don't know my wife. Like in this culture, like, men, we take what we want. We get what we want. We can do whatever we want. Like, our wives have no rights. We can say the word and it's divorce and they're left on the street. Like, they're not worthy. They're not honorable. They work for us. They're a commodity for us. Like, so when you say love your wives, do you mean my wife? Because you don't know her. I was like, yeah. This is the way it is with us that are following Jesus. We love our wives, but how do we do it? Just as Christ, just as Jesus loved the church and gave himself up for her. Like, Paul, hold on. I'm supposed to leverage everything that I am, my power, my money, my influence, my relationships, whatever I've got, I'm supposed to leverage it for the betterment of other people, specifically for the women in my life. Like, I'm supposed to lift them up. What are you talking about? I'm the godfather. They're supposed to kiss the ring for me. No, not so with you, Jesus says. You leverage your life to honor, put a high price tag on everyone else. Fellas, we've got to learn to do this now with every single woman in our life, or we will never be able to do it with our wife, to live with such a high price tag on their head of honor. Romans 12:10 says, be devoted to one another in love, honor one another above yourselves. That's so hard, because in our world, might means right. And if you get the power, you get to make the rules. So men, what I would say is use your power, use your money, use your influence, use everything you've got for those of us, those around us, specifically for every woman in our life to be able to feel honor when they're around you. Not because you are trying to date them or not because you're trying to marry them, but because God has already said that's who they are and who we're called to be. Forget what you've seen about anything else that makes you a man. Culture has lied to you. If it does not make us look more like Jesus, it is not authentic manhood. Who was the toughest person from the inside out with the most power of any man that has ever had, and he leveraged everything that he had to make sure that everyone else around him felt value and honor and rescue and was lifted up to the sacrifice of himself. So anything that makes you bow up, like, well, I would give respect if I got respect, because that's how it works in my area. Not so with you if you're following Jesus, man. You want to be thought of as honorable? You leverage everything to stoop down and lift everyone else up, not for what they can do for you. 1 Peter 3:7 would call women co-heirs with us, that the women in our life have the same rights as daughters of God, as we have as sons of God. They are made in the image of God and who Jesus died for. Be careful how you treat her, God would say. That's my girl. Like, she's my heiress. She's got my inheritance coming her way. Don't mess it up with her. Every woman, not just the women you're attracted to, but the women you're not attracted to, the women you play with or flirt with or ghosted at one point, every category of woman possible, you have a responsibility to attach a high price tag of honor on them. And all of this is potential practice for one day when you can honor your future partner, potentially. I'm just telling dating guys, you cannot date like a slave owner and women being commodities and put a ring on her finger and expect to be able to honor her as a co-heir quickly. Doesn't work. Learn how to honor every single one of us, every single woman around you, so that when the person that you are called to serve and give up the rest of your life for, you're not treating her like a slave owner would, or that she's a commodity. You've learned to treat every woman with respect and honor, and then it's easy for you to honor her above all women as a co-heir or a co-laborer with you in the kingdom. That takes practice, and that is not normal. Can I just tell you, fellas, if you date that way, you will probably have your pick of any woman in the world, because all the women that I know are going, there are no guys like that left. They don't exist. It's a unicorn. And if there was, we would line up because we wouldn't be in the bachelorette with him. Like, that's what we want to do. So I'm telling you, learn to live with honor. Learn to treat women with dignity and respect. You will stand out as a man among boys. Got it. To do that, though, we got to renew our mind. This is not going to be fun. We got to renew our mind with what we entertain ourselves with. You probably have stuff on your playlist in this moment that if I said the words, you would be so embarrassed that I even said them from the stage. But if you listen to them in the car all the time and what it says about what women are for or what women are, we've got to renew our mind. Because if we can demean women that way, then we can't put a high price tag on them. Because if we demean that women that way, that means that they're a commodity to us that we can do with whatever we want. And if you're like, well, that's just my culture, man, that's just stuff. Well, like, your culture is a less than culture than what Jesus' culture has created us to be. So by the time the sun goes down, get that stuff off your playlist, because you got to renew your mind to the high price tag that women hold in our life. And you're like, I won't have any music. That's okay. It's okay. There's good music out there. I'll be all right. We'll figure it out. Some of us, we got to learn to fight the battle of erotic imagery and porn. Can he say that? Yes, I can say that. You got to go for it. You got to fight, because that only deadens your ability to honor an actual woman. It deadens your ability. When we got screen after screen after screen after image after erotic image after erotic image, it deadens our ability. It objectifies women and deadens our ability to place a high price tag on a real, actual, live woman that God has called you to serve and love. Fellas, I'm not mad. I just know that God has called us to better. And he has a better vision for your future that maybe you haven't seen before. And it looks like honoring women. But pride won't let us do it. What pride does is make us small. We can't honor somebody when we're full of ourselves, when we think we are bigger or badder or don't agree with God about who we are and who they are. But Jesus taught and modeled a radically different way to live. Pride also crowds others out. When I'm full of me, there is no room for you. Pride also crowds God out. Pride makes me want to be known. I actually love this verse from Philippians 2. It's one of the key verses of the New Testament. If you hear all the honor pieces we're trying to get, this is what we're going after together. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but also each of you to the interests of the others. In relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used for his own advantage. You're not for my advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant. Being made in human likeness and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. There's areas of honor that we need to probably walk through quickly. Spend a lot of time on men. And I know that you want to argue, I'm with you, because I'd be like, well, if she would... You don't even know. Are you going to say anything to the women? Because if I felt honored, like, you're going to say stuff to the women, right? I'm like, yes. Yes, I am. But I'm starting with the men for 90% of it, because we get it more wrong than right, all right? Areas of honor for women. If you have a man that treats you with dignity, respect, and honor, you need to shout it from the mountainsides, because he is somebody that we need to learn from, because there is a generations of men who don't know how to do this well. So tell the world that your man honors you. Women, you got to honor, put a high price tag on his heart, on his mind, on who he's called to be, on his work, on his emotions, even though he shields them away, on what he needs out of respect. Women, we need to put a high price tag on each other, because I'm not a woman. I don't know if this is a surprise to you, but I know that they're like, women have this way of comparing and competing and like going at each other. Guys, we can go play basketball, talk about each other's moms, we're not going to do that anymore, because that's not a high price tag. hit each other in the face, and then go to dinner and everything's great. Like, right? It's just like, yeah, that was awesome. It was fun competition. Women, like, they're going to be a sideways glance, and you hate that woman for the rest of her life, and she didn't even look at you. You know, like, we got to stop. We got to put a high price tag on each other, women, on the comparison and the competing. We got to celebrate each other's accomplishments. We got to stop judging each other's differences in health or parenting or vaccinations or work or staying at home. We put a high price tag on each other. We be each other's biggest fans. It's some areas of honor for coworkers. When you place a high value on one another, you view each other as teammates, not just a way that you can get ahead so you can use them or stab them in the back or step on them or take credit for what they did. When you view each other, have a high price tag for each other, you want each other to win. And you reject toxicity in the workplace. Not so with you. You have high honor. Family, when you have a high value of each other, you look for ways to serve. No one wants to do the dishes. No one. But you look for a way to serve behind the scenes and not get credit for it or keep score. You keep no record of wrongs when you have a high honor culture in your family. You encourage one another. You cheer each other on. You catch each other doing right as parents. Or, you know, you catch each other doing right when you're parenting your kids. You catch them like in ways where we're not just coming down on them. We want to attach a high price tag to our hearts and minds and souls in our homes. When we place a high value on one another in friendship, you handle conflict quickly because the relationship is most important. They're most important. You keep confidences. You show up. You bear each other's burdens. When you honor each other in marriage, you stay faithful. Not just physically, but emotionally and relationally and mentally. When you honor each other, have a high price tag on your marriage, you don't keep secrets. Like that stuff reside in the dark. I mean, you can like save up and take her on vacation or save up and get her a present. Like that's not counting as a secret, but you know what I'm talking about, the secrets of our heart that our marriages can keep. But when you honor each other, you don't do that. When you honor each other in marriage, you also put each other first. You think, like, my responsibility is what can I do to make the other person thrive emotionally, physically, spiritually, and relationally? That's my job description in my marriage. Because I have a high honor that I won. Am I perfect? I'm the furthest thing from perfect. I mean, she would tell you. She did tell you. I'm the furthest thing from perfect in this, in all these areas. But, man, I want to be someone that God would say, that's exactly how I would want a son of mine to treat the rest of my daughters in the world. So here's the deal. I just want to challenge us to do better in valuing each other in relationship, not just romantic relationships, but all relationships, where the people that are watching our lives go, I don't know if I believe everything that they believe about God and Jesus and church and Bible and all that stuff, but I cannot deny that the way that they treat each other is way better than anything that I've ever seen. And I would want to be treated in a friendship like that, or as a coworker like that, or in a dating relationship like that, or in a family like that, or in a marriage like that. So maybe there's something to it that I need to learn. Give each other the grace to not be perfect, but also the motivation that there's a better way for us to go after. Why don't you pray with me? God, you're good and you're great. And thanks for not like rubbing our noses in our failure in this area, but lifting our head out of it and lifting our eyes up that there's a better way to live because of how you leveraged everything for us. You lived with a high price tag on all of our heads. It was worth your life to rescue us. So God, may we be the kind of people that stoop low and lift others high as worthy of honor because you've done that for us. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.